This episode of Just Add Sprinkles Celebrating Motherhood is brought to you by Adaptive Sound Technologies, maker of Electrofan Kinder. Make sure you stay tuned for a special discount code.
Go ahead, shake that jar of sprinkles and celebrate your role as a mom. I'm Stephanie Fleece with City Moms Blog Network, and my hope is that the next 40 minutes or so bring a smile to your face, a skip to your step, and a sprinkle or two to your mundane. This is Just Add Sprinkles, Celebrating Motherhood, a podcast by City Moms Blog Network. Hi, I'm Stephanie Fleece. Happy New Year from all of us at City Moms Blog Network. I don't know about you, but the beginning of a new year is one of my very favorite times of a year. And the reason being, I love the fresh start that it feels. I love new beginnings. I love the opportunity to look back and reevaluate and then plan your future going forward based on your reevaluation. I know personally for myself, I've spent the past couple weeks really looking at my calendar for 2017 and saying, like, what worked, what didn't work, and then projecting into 2018 and with lots of hopes and dreams and goals, some practical, some big, but I just love it. I love the energy that the new year brings, and I certainly hope that that is the case for y'all that are listening. Now, I know I don't know what all of your goals include for this new year, but my guess is, as a mom, rest in some sort of form of the word has been built into your goals, whether you've written them down or not. If there's one universal issue all moms can relate to, it's sleep. We're always wanting more, we're needing more, both for our kids and for ourselves. And so on this episode, we're talking about that very topic, and we're talking to a sleep expert, Kylie Salick. Kylie has 16 years of experience with babies and kids under five. She's based in New York City and is one of the top sleep consultants in the United States and a very sought-after speaker and writer on the topic of sleep. In our podcast today, she's going to walk us through the common mistakes we make as parents and give us some great tips on getting our little ones to sleep restfully through the night. As many of you know, I'm a mom to three girls, ages 8, 6, and 4. So I have been around the block a few times, but I learned a ton from Kylie in our conversation. I'm so excited to share her insight with you today. We have a lot of information to cover, including questions submitted by you, our listeners. So this podcast will simply include my conversation with Kylie, followed by a discount code from our sponsor, Adaptive Sound Technologies, maker of the Electrofan Kinder. With all that being said, let's jump into my conversation with Kylie. Hey, Kylie. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks, Stephanie.
I am so excited to have you on because at the beginning of a new year, I feel like all moms are looking to the year and thinking about what they'd like to see happen in their families that might be different than the last year. And I know, at least for me, my kids sleeping better is always just like an underlying goal. Like, how can I get my kids to sleep better? I'm just very much excited about our conversation and all of the tips and tricks that you have up your sleeve that you can share with myself as well as our listeners. And so I think to start, I'd love for you to share what your career looks like. And what it looks like day in and day out in helping parents with their kiddos, especially when it comes to sleep hygiene, as you call it. I love that term.
Yeah, so typically the clients that I work with, I begin sessions with them with an in-home overnight assessment. So that's about 12 or 13 hours of me being in their home, spending the night, getting to know their baby, getting to understand their sleep environment, and being there to coach them through the first night of sleep training. So that's actually the portion that's kind of the most hands-on for me. And then all of my clients also get 2 weeks of follow-up support. So that's real-time text support, phone calls, Skype support, as they're going through nap training and nighttime sleep training.
You're like the sleep angel that comes in theory, right?
Right, exactly.
Now, I'm curious, though, like at what age, around what age you come in to do those, especially that night assessment, and then obviously the 2 weeks you mentioned thereafter, but is there a roundabout age that you're generally in people's home doing the sleep training?
Well, there's two answers to that. There's an ideal age for me to come and help, but the ideal age oftentimes is missed, and parents tend to wait a few extra months before they're really in a painful, tragic, sleep-deprived state before they actually reach out. The earliest I will go is 12 weeks, and then the ideal time to sleep train is really between 3 months and 5 months. And in terms of when people typically tend to reach out to me, that actually tends to be more from the 8 to 12 month mark.
Okay, in 8 to 12 marks is, months is when you're saying is maybe a little bit later than when you'd like to be able to be pulled in.
There's nothing wrong with starting at any age. I sleep train kids, you know, who are 5 and 6 years old. It's not like, well, if you've missed the window, then there's just no hope for you. There's just the only reason that it's more ideal to start between 3 and 5 months is because at that age, the odds of your baby teething are significantly lower. Separation anxiety hasn't set in yet, and they're not yet pulling to sit up or stand up in their crib, which means that their awareness of your presence is significantly lower. And that's especially important for parents who, in a lot of my families, we're in Manhattan, we all live in tiny apartments. A lot of the parenting situations are the baby is in a crib at the end of the bed, or at the, you know, just feet away from the bed. So having a 10-month-old who can stand up and stare at you versus having a 3-month-old who's just going to lie down and be more agreeable during the process, it does make a big difference.
As you know, we have a number of listener-submitted questions that we're going to talk about today, but some of those questions are more geared towards the infant kind of stage, which is what it sounds like you oftentimes are working with in terms of your clientele. We do have some questions that are more toddler-based for moms that are listening that have toddlers over, let's say, the age of one. And we also have a few questions for older kiddos if we are able to get to those. But I want to start with a more general topic and ask kind of what your thoughts are about maybe the biggest mistakes that you find parents make when it comes to sleep training.
There's so many.
Yes, I'm sure.
Because there's so many misconceptions, and the misconceptions are what lead parents to making mistakes around this. And by the way, when I say mistakes, there's nothing inherently wrong with the steps that parents are taking in trying to sleep train their child. It's really a learning process for everybody. So there's no negative connotation around, you know, the idea of making a mistake. But in terms of identifying the biggest mistakes, they're really, really simple fixes. Mistake number one is parents are told that they need to teach their baby the difference between their days and their nights by making sure that they have sunlight coming into the baby's room during the napping during the day. That's not correct. You need blackout shades in your baby's nursery. Sleeping needs to be happening in the dark, whether it's nap time sleeping or night sleeping. And even though it through the night, it is going to be dark just because it's nighttime. Well, when the sun starts coming up around 5:30 a.m., if you don't have blackout shades, your baby's going to be waking up with the sun. And although, you know, maybe some of us are early risers, I think the majority of us feel like 5 a.m. is not a great wake-up time. So problem number one, blackout shades. Get blackout shades and make sure that there's literally no light coming in around the edges. Use it during nap time, use it during nighttime. The other big mistake the parents make is this idea that I want my baby to be able to sleep through anything, so I'm going to train them to fall asleep without a sound machine, which I understand in theory why parents think that way. But the fact of the matter is your baby is going to be getting such better sleep if they have a sound machine playing through the night and for naps as well. And there's no harm in playing a sound machine. There's actually quite a few benefits. One of the biggest things that I see when I walk into a new home and I find the sound machine in the baby's nursery is that it's either the wrong sound machine or they just don't have one. So I'm a little bit of a snob when it comes to sound machines. I have a really specific taste in what I like. So much so that I actually won't work with a family until they buy a particular one. It's called the Electrofan Kinder, and it's available on my website, backtobasicsparenting.com. The reason that I love the Electrofan Kinder is because it offers something called darkest brown noise. And brown noise is very different from white noise. It's different from playing lullabies. It's different from playing ocean sounds or any of these other, this idea that if you play Mozart, you're going to make your child brilliant. That's fine for tummy time. But during the night, your baby really is going to sleep better if there's just this boring, monotonous, soothing brown noise playing. And the Electrofan Kinder offers that, and it's the best quality.
Yeah, and the Electrofan Kinder is our sponsor for today's podcast, which is a great segue to our conversation. I actually have two of their units in our girls' rooms, and while I'm going to have to check out the brown noise because I'm not sure what ours are set on right now. But they have, that thing has a ton of sounds. It's got a lot of options, but I will definitely be checking it out myself to see what we're using for our kiddos. But so you said the a dark room with the dark blackout shades and the sound machine are kind of
top two mistakes. Yep, absolutely. And those are things that you can fix on your own. You don't have to hire a sleep coach. You could just run out and purchase those things. And I mean, for the majority of people, that's going to make a huge difference in your baby's sleep.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, as you were saying those things, the funny thing is I'd say that a number of moms that might be listening right now that hear those two suggestions are thinking, well, I want my kid as an adult to be able to sleep in a light room without a sound machine, that sort of thing. And yeah, in theory, to your point, in theory, it would be nice if they could do all of those things. But I think oftentimes as moms, we have to be like, well, what's going to work right now? and we need to be more practical and saying like, our babies need better rest, our kids need better rest, and we need better rest just to be better moms in general. And so if a little, you know, buying some blackout shades and a sound machine are going to help us to reach that goal, I think, why not? Like, stop putting those hindrances on our minds.
Exactly.
Let's kind of transition specifically into talking about some of the questions for infant sleep. And so one of the questions particular what are your tips for getting infants to self-soothe enough to put themselves to sleep?
This is also one of the big misconceptions. A lot of us think, because we read it online and we're told by our mommy friends, eventually they just figure it out. And there's nothing proactive that we can be doing to assist. No, they'll figure it out. Just give them time. For some babies, that is absolutely true. The problem is you don't know if that's your baby or not. you might be lucky. You might win the baby sleep lottery in terms of your baby's just a good sleeper. But a lot of times, the longer that you go without helping your child learn to self-soothe, the harder it becomes to teach them that skill. Teaching them that skill is really just, that's what sleep training is. Sleep training really is just behavior modification for your baby, and quite frankly, for the parents too.
Right. which is why you come in to right. the home.
Exactly. So teaching your child to self-soothe, it really goes age by age. So a pacifier is not an inherently bad tool. In fact, it's a really useful tool for learning to self-soothe, but not at every age. So for example, a pacifier for a 4-month-old is not a great idea because when they spit out their pacifier, they haven't yet figured out how to find it and put it back in their own mouth, which means you're going to become the hourly Binky replacement service at your baby's crib all night. So that same tool with an 8-month-old, a 9-month-old, is wonderful because you can stick 3 Binkies in their bed, know that if they spit one out, the odds are pretty darn good they'll be able to find one in the dark and put it back in and go back to sleep. So the tool of using a Binky is something that just depends on the age and their dexterity. And then the biggest thing to keep in mind is that when the first 12 weeks of life, it is natural for you to soothe them. It is natural for you to rock them to sleep, to nurse them until they fall asleep, to shush them and bounce them and pat them until they fall asleep. And while that's great in the first 12 weeks, anything after that is just kind of becoming a habit for them to cling to. And it's basically depriving them of the skill set of being able to sleep independently without your assistance. So in order to accomplish that, it really is a matter of putting them down awake and helping them learn that they can fall asleep without you assisting.
Sure. Quick question. I'm going to circle back to your comments about the pacifier because I find that to be very interesting. Now, because, you know, at 4 months, I totally agree that like a baby cannot pick up a pacifier and put it back in their mouth at 4 months, but they can at 9 months. Now, obviously, a baby at 9 months is probably likely not going to love a pacifier if they haven't been using it for that long. But maybe your experience is different than that. Do you suggest, you know, possibly using a pacifier, but not for sleep training? Is that what you're suggesting earlier on?
Honestly, if you can have the pacifier in your back pocket as a tool for sleep training, it's going to be super helpful to you. But if you're some babies, we also have to remember babies are individual little people with their own personalities. And some babies genuinely don't like pacifiers. They just don't. If that's one of your babies, then okay, that's not a tool that you have accessible to you. But it never hurts to try to introduce it or reintroduce it later. And there's no such thing as, you're not completely, I don't want to say you're not completely screwed, but let's face it, you're not completely screwed if you don't, I'm trying to edit my language.
Yeah, that's okay. We're adults.
If you don't have access to a Binky, if that's not an option for you, you're not out of options. So one of the other things about pacifiers, parents are fearful. I don't want them to get addicted to a pacifier. I don't want them to be one of these children that has a pacifier when they're 4. Okay. Yeah. So just because you're using it as a tool for sleep training doesn't mean you lose all power and control in terms of taking away the Binky when the time is right.
Right.
Basically, don't prevent yourself from having access to a great tool just because you're fearful of a Binky down the road being problematic. That's something you still have power and control over when you decide to take it away.
That's exactly like what we're even talking about with the sound machine and the blackout curtains. It's not like you're setting up this future for your child to never be able to sleep without those aids, but they really can be a great asset, especially in those little years when moms tend to be so sleep deprived themselves anyway, that, you know, any of these types of tools, I think, to your point, at least it, especially in our home, have been helpful in raising kiddos that generally, knock on wood, sleep quite well. Now, mine are a little bit older, but let's talk about cry it out versus letting your kid cry and fuss a bit before checking on them. I'd love to hear your thoughts about that strategy and that kind of buzzword in parenting.
Yeah, cry it out definitely has the effect on all parents that makes you just kind of cringe. just the turn of phrase alone is something that makes parents really freak out. So cry it out, actually, it's actually called the extinction method, and it's clinically proven to work in over 90% of babies, and these are in short-term studies as well as long-term studies. Parents don't seem to want to hear that. So I actually don't start with cry it out. It's not my go-to method. The reality is extinction extinction method, or as people tend to know it, is cry it out. There's no short-term harm and there is no long-term harm. But parents, even though we know that and there are really valid studies supporting that, it's, let's face it, it is really hard to hear your baby cry. It's one of the most, you know, heartbreaking experiences is hearing your baby cry and not going to get them. So for that reason and for another reason too, I don't start there. For those parents who are listening who are going to try cry it out, once you start sleep training and you've already gone into the cry it out method, it's hard to go backwards from there. So I always recommend starting with a gentle sleep approach first and finding out if your baby's going to respond well to that before moving on to cry it out. Because if you start with cry it out, you get cold feet and you back up, gentle sleep methods are not going to be effective at that point. And there's kind of a, you know, basic human psychology reason for that. so we start with gentle sleep training methods, and then we move on to ferberizing, which ferberizing, I think a lot of people misunderstand what that is. A lot of parents, I say ferberizing, they think I mean cry it out. Ferberizing is when you set a timer and you let your baby fuss and cry for 5 minutes before you go in and you give them brief reassurance. And then you up the timer by 2 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever increments you feel comfortable upping it by.
Sure. Let's go back to the gentle sleep training is what you said you start with, because I'm curious how you would define that and what are some things that you would do in that stage.
Gentle sleep training is any approach that's going to keep you present in your child's room while they're learning to fall asleep.
Okay.
So this is great for babies who are more of the separation anxiety age. And this is also the number one method that all parents prefer, because all parents find themselves thinking, well, I don't want my child to feel abandoned. So I'd rather stay in the room with them while they're learning to fall asleep. So one example of that is the pick up, put down method, where when your child is crying, you pick them up, you comfort them, you calm them down, and then when they're calm, you put them back down. Another method is, it was made famous by the Sleep Lady, and she has something called the Sleep Lady Shuffle, which is where you put your baby down in their crib and you stay right next to their crib until they fall asleep. And then you move your chair back away from the crib. Night by night, you move further and further away until you're not in the room. So that's another gentle method. I am willing to start with those. Those are like extremely gentle.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm willing to start with those. But in my experience, and I've been sleep training children for 16 years, the majority of babies don't respond favorably to this extreme gentle sleep training method. And the reason is, I want everybody who's listening to imagine, if we don't have a two-year-old, we all know a two-year-old, right? A niece, a nephew, somebody in our family. Imagine that you have a two-year-old and you set them down at a table and you put an enormous piece of chocolate cake in front of them. And you say to them, you can't eat that, but you can look at it and you can smell it. How is that two-year-old going to respond?
Not well.
Right. They're going to be pretty darn mad.
Right.
Because they don't want to look at it. They don't want to smell it. They want to eat it. And it's right there. So the parallel there is that, you know, a lot of our babies don't respond well to the gentle sleep training methods because they don't want to see you. They don't want to be able to smell that you're right there. They want you to pick them up and put them to sleep. So while that methodology of a very gentle sleep training approach might be effective for a minority of babies, don't be surprised if it just kind of makes your baby more angry. I say that, but I always encourage people to try it though. Try that first. But be cognizant of the way that your baby responds. If your baby responds by getting more upset, take that as them saying to you, hey, this isn't working.
Right.
And then that's when you're cue to kind of move on to a different approach.
Which, let's now kind of talk about the next approach that it sounds like you start generally with. obviously given a number of factors, especially likely how the parents respond and, you know, just their temperaments in general. But take us through kind of what the first steps beyond the gentle sleep training would be.
So from there, we move on to Ferberizing. And we do the same. One of the reasons why it's really beneficial to have somebody in the home with you is because the desire to cave in is really, really strong when you're sleep training. And oftentimes clients will reach out to me and say, we've tried so many times and we always end up caving in. The other benefit of having somebody in the home is that in your mind, when your baby has been crying for 37 seconds, it feels like 3 minutes and 29 seconds.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, your sense of time is very distorted when you're hearing your baby crying. So, you know, it's important to set a timer. It's important to really pay attention to your partner, hold hands, deep breaths, stick to the timer. Don't go in until the timer says it's been whatever interval you've agreed upon ahead of time. And then when you do go in, you're not picking your baby up. It is not, that is no longer the game plan. At this point, you go in, you reassure your baby. If they're a baby who is still laying, you pat their back and you say, shh, and you say, night, night, I'm right here. And you muster up your zenest voice possible. And you stay there for about a minute, 90 seconds, something like that. And then you leave. The misunderstanding here is that the goal in that 90-second time frame is to get them to stop crying. That's not the goal. The goal is to just reassure them that you're still there. And quite frankly, the goal is for parents to feel better also. That parents like to feel like, okay, I'm not abandoning my child, so look, I'm showing up at these scheduled intervals and I'm still right here. So it helps them to feel better too. So you come back out and then you and your partner should discuss, well, how did that go? Did the baby calm down? Did the baby maintain the same level of intensity? Or did the baby get more upset? I always recommend that parents start sleep training on a Thursday night and have both parents try to get Friday off work.
That's probably a wise suggestion.
So that way you have, you know, no expectation that you're going to get any sleep Thursday night, but you don't have to go to work Friday, and then Saturday and Sunday you're off. It's the best way to time-wise to set up sleep training.
Now, for all of the listeners that have only small children, this is not going to make sense, but it's kind of like potty training too. I always like to do potty training on a long weekend just to prep yourself for it. So that's a good suggestion.
Exactly. You do. You have to be emotionally prepared for a hard few days. I mean, I would love to sit here and be like, oh, it's a piece of cake. Everybody will be sleeping in no time. It's easy peasy. But that's not the truth. It's hard. That's why it's such a big topic.
Yes. Oh, totally. I actually like to say potty training and sleep training. If moms had like Girl Scout vests, like Girl Scouts have, where they have all those like earned badges and stuff on them, I'm like, we should have our own mom vest. Like, you deserve three potty training badges or three sleep training badges.
That's hysterical.
Oh my gosh, it is such hard work. And not to mention with sleep training, you're sleep deprived yourself. And so you're wanting to make wise choices, but it's hard to do so when you're just exhausted.
You go into survival mode. And in survival mode, it's what is the fastest, easiest way to get everybody in my house back to sleep?
Yes.
And often, or not often, always, the answer to that question is not the thing that's going to help long term.
Right. Now, I know we've talked about, you know, you mentioned using a sound machine, Electrofan Kinder being your preferred, and I would very much vouch for that. You also mentioned blackout shades and a pacifier at a certain age. Are there any other, like, useful sleep, we'll call them sleep aid tools, but for lack of a better way to describe them, but anything else that you would recommend parents use?
Yeah, I mean, as long as your baby has an attachment to a particular item, put that in the crib with them, unless it's something like, oh, my child really loves these sharp wooden blocks, you know.
Don't.
But anything that's a relatively soft, squishy thing, if they happen to love it, it goes in the crib with them. That's a transition item that's going to help them to feel comforted. It's going to be the thing that they snuggle up with, and it's going to aid them in transitioning to being able to sleep independently. Obviously, for very little babies, there's a safety aspect that you need to think about. So, you know, you don't put blankets and pillows and soft things in a bed with a tiny baby. But for older babies, babies who are strong enough to roll, babies who are strong enough to, you know, push up and turn their head from side to side, and also to grab. And my test for babies is always when they're awake and they're having playtime, put them on the playmat and take whatever item you think that they love. And literally, while you're watching them, while you're sitting right there, put it on their face and see what they do. Do they grab it and move it? Great. Do they grab it and move it multiple times in a row? Awesome. They are ready to be in their crib with that item. If you put it on their face and they just kind of wiggle their arms and legs, they are not yet ready to be in the crib alone with that. So that's kind of the best way to test and see. Because there really isn't an age that you can say, well, at 6 months, this is absolutely safe, or at 4 months, it's totally safe, because every baby's different. They're hitting their milestones at different times, and you have to know for your own baby, when is it safe to put them in with a little, you know, a little lovey or a little stuffed animal or a little something.
That's great insight. And I'm gonna give a PSA to all moms out there. This is one of my random tips that I give to new moms. If they like a lovey blanket, especially, you need to buy like two or three of that. Oh, yeah. And you don't just need two or three of them and then the second and third one in the closet. You need to swap them out so it's used the same amount as that one, because I've talked to so many moms that they lose the lovey and then they try to give them one that's fresh and the same one but new, and they're like, yeah, I don't like that one. Well, now you've got to alternate that sucker, and you need a lot of them.
That's exactly right. And actually, along those same lines, lovey, if you're traveling and you need your baby to sleep in a hotel crib or at your in-law's house in a crib, the two of the best things you can do is to don't wash their crib sheet before you travel. Bring their crib sheet that smells like home with you, as well as the lovey that smells like their crib and smells like home. So don't wash the crib sheet and don't wash the lovey before you travel. It's the scent that's going to be comforting and helpful.
I love that suggestion myself. Well, we've got just a little bit more time left, and I want to touch on naps especially, and maybe transition a little bit into toddlers, because I think obviously napping as an infant is part of, you know, sleep training as well. But the transition for toddlers in particular, and some listener questions are around like nap strikes in toddlers, when you transition from two naps to one nap, all of that kind of is tricky, you know, in parenthood to determine really what's best for your kid. Because to your point, and one thing that I've been thinking about a lot in our conversation, is that you're absolutely right. You know, we cannot expect to parent or sleep train each of our kids the same as, say, our other kid, or even another mom friend is training their kid, because everyone is so different. Every kid is so different. And so I guess I'd be curious what tips, if any, you might have when it comes to naps with toddlers.
Well, okay, so naps with toddlers. I mean, napping, there is a reason that there hasn't been a book written about nap training. The reason is there are so many variables and so many if-then scenarios to account for that there isn't. This is actually the biggest issue that I run into with clients. Once we get the first couple of nights of sleep training, the emphasis totally switches to they need help with naps. And that's where most of my energy goes, is helping people figure out how many naps a day, how long should the naps be, how long should they stay awake in between naps, when do I transition them, how do I transition them. And so for those reasons, there really isn't a simple, you know, general answer that I can give for this. All I can say is it's the most important thing that parents need to be focusing on is not allowing their children to get overtired. And that counts for nap time too. So there's a look that your baby and toddler is going to give you when they're ready to be put down. And it's just kind of their eyes glaze over and they look like they're just staring off into space. That's your first cue that it's time to get ready for a nap. When you miss that cue, what happens about 20, 25 minutes later, that's when they start rubbing their eyes and yawning and getting cranky. So once they're rubbing their eyes and yawning and getting cranky, you're past the optimal sleep window. And it makes getting them down for a nap and getting them down for sleep much harder. If you can catch them when they have that glazed over look, you're going to see that they go down much easier. They fall asleep faster.
So many of the things that you're saying are just be a student of your child, right? Like right. You have to look for those cues, like you're saying, for nap time. And also recognize that not every kid is going to give the cues at the same time.
Right.
Nor are they all going to sleep the exact same amount of time, you know?
Exactly. Like one of the worst things you can do is Google like nap schedule 8-month-old and then just stick to whatever you find. No, your baby is an individual, and maybe the typical child can stand, being on 2 naps a day at 8 months and staying awake for 3 hours in between. Okay, but maybe your baby really still needs to be on 3 naps a day and really can't stand being awake longer than 2 hours and 30 minutes. You know, so you have to account for your child's individuality. And the biggest thing is when you think that you see sleep, the cues for your sleep, you've probably already missed the biggest cue, which is the glazed over eyes. So cranky, yawning, rubbing eyes, those are signs that you've missed the first and most important sleep cue. So try to start paying attention to that glazed over look in their eyes.
Now, I've got one more topic that I'd love to hear from you on before we close things out. We had a number of listeners, and I will also share that this is something that we struggled with, probably a couple years back, but really with all of our children at one point or another, are night terrors. In children. I'd love to hear your thoughts and just insight on night terrors, especially, and any practical tips that you might be willing to share about them.
Right. So sleep coaches overwhelmingly are not medical doctors. And so although I can talk about night terrors with you and I can make some suggestions, night terrors are a medical condition. And if you really are positive that your child is experiencing night terrors rather than a nightmare, there's a really big difference, that's something that you would need to actually speak with a sleep doctor about, because a lot of the solutions for that type of thing are prescription based, and that's something that, you know, the best sleep coach in the world couldn't really assist with that. In general, one of the best non-medicated ways of dealing with sleep terrors is really inconvenient for everybody. It's a scheduled waking. So basically, night terrors, when they really genuinely are night terrors, tend to happen at the same time, around like within the same couple of hour window every night, because it's happening in the first stretch of sleep. So it tends to happen within 3 to 4 hours into sleep onset, and it tends to happen during a non-REM cycle stage of sleep. So that being said, for parents who really are struggling with this, number one, talk to your pediatrician. And number two, what your pediatrician is going to have you do, they're going to have you for about a week straight write down the exact time that your child is having night terrors and start keeping track of when that happens, because they're going to want you to anticipate your child, the onset of the night terror, by waking them up about 20 minutes ahead of time. So that means you're going to have to set a timer, an alarm for yourself to wake up 20 minutes before the onset of the night terror so you can wake your child up so you can disrupt the onset of the pattern. Again, that's something I'm happy to talk about, but it's not something that as a behavior modification sleep coach that we have any authority, you know, in that area.
That's very good to know. I think especially just for all moms to know that that is a, you know, considered a medical condition. And now I guess I would love to know, at least in my case, and maybe you can't speak to this, but I found that in my kiddos that did experience night terrors, it was generally when we had major changes in our life that happened. It's like for some reason that's what triggered them. So for us, it was when we brought home a new baby or when we moved. Or, you know, just when their whole little world got flipped upside down, that it triggered the night terrors. And I'm curious, again, maybe you can't speak to this, but if that is on average kind of when you see that they happen.
Yeah, so absolutely correct. And the difference between night terrors when there's a significant change in the home and night terrors when there doesn't seem to be any change in the home, is that when you bring home a new baby, when you get a pet, when everything, you move to a new home, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and night terrors are onset then, those are fairly temporary. It's typically a short phase that just kind of passes once the child is able to adapt. There are, though, children who have night terrors that just don't seem to correlate with anything and that will go on for years if without the help of a medical professional. So it is important to talk to your doctor about it. The other thing I can say, this is for night terrors, this is for good sleepers, bad sleepers, and everybody in between. One of the best things you can do is have an earlier bedtime and making sure that you're not keeping your kids up too late, they're not overtired, and that their bedtime routine is really predictable and consistent. That's one of the things, the biggest thing that prevents or helps at least night terrors is that bedtime is on time, there's consistency and predictability in the routine, and they know, oh, okay, I'm getting into the bathtub, mom and dad turned the lights down low, mom and dad's body language and tone of voice seems to be calmer during this time of night. Now I get my PJs, now I put on lotion. Whatever the order is that you guys go in, these are all cueing your child and your toddler and your older kid that sleep is coming. And it really assists in, you know, reducing night terrors or preventing them.
Yeah, well, and I would assume that those things are likely suggestions that you might give just for sleep training in general as well.
Yeah,
not just night terror prevention, but those are things that just help kids, you know, to your point, not be overtired, to get the rest that they need, but also to have some predictability. I think kiddos love the predictability in their lives, what they can know will be next. And that was a huge part of our sleep training experience as well. It's just, I will admit I'm a little bit of a sleep Nazi, in that, like, I love sleep myself so much that I was like, my kids will love sleep. And now all of them, I have an earlier riser in my 6-year-old that I wish would love sleep a little bit more than me, but I also have had to embrace the fact that every kid is so different and their bodies are different in how they, in what time they wake up to, you know, like how long they napped and all of those details. And anytime that I put everybody in all my kids in a box and expect them to respond exactly how their older sister did, is when I get into trouble.
Right.
So, oh gosh, well, all of this was so helpful. I feel like I could pummel you with probably 20 more questions because you are so insightful in this topic especially. But thank you for joining us and for just sharing your wisdom about sleep training. And again, just for being with us, I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. And for those who are, you know, curious about finding me and also finding the Lectrofan Kinder, everything is on my website, which is backtobasicsparenting.com. My contact information is there and everything about the Lectrofan Kinder is there as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Kylie.
All right. Thanks so much, Stephanie. I appreciate it.
As we mentioned mentioned during that conversation with Kylie, this episode of Just Add Sprinkles Celebrating Motherhood is brought to you by Adaptive Sound Technologies, maker of the Lectrofan Kinder. Lectrofan Kinder is a first-of-its-kind sound and light machine that features white noises, fan sounds, nature sounds, and lullabies, and it's a nightlight. And one of the other features I love about it is that it plugs directly into a wall outlet. Lectrofan Kinder creates a sleep-inducing environment with relaxing sounds and lullabies for your little one. And I love that Kylie mentioned in our conversation that she actually does not even take a client in her line of work until they've gotten this unit. And so she's that passionate about it. So this is how it works. Lectrofan Kinder has a free iOS or Android smartphone app. So you download that and parents can adjust sounds from any room in the house to minimize disruptions. It comes with more than 75 sounds, including lullabies, non-looping nature sounds, white noise, and brown noise, as Kylie mentioned. And it's also awesome for travel because it's small, compact, and super light. I am not one bit exaggerating when I say that this product is one of my very favorite products that I learned about in 2017. We have two units in both of our kiddos' bedrooms, and we absolutely love it. So you're going to want to check it out for sure. And it's available at soundofsleep.com. And just for listening to this episode, you are getting a discount code to try this Lectrofan Kinder. You can shop online at soundofsleep.com and use the code CITY20 for a 20% off discount. That's CITY20 for a 20% off discount on the Lectrofan Kinder at soundofsleep.com. That's it for this episode of Just Add Sprinkles Celebrating Motherhood. Thank you so much for joining me as we chatted about one of my favorite personal topics, sleep. A huge thank you to our sponsor, Adaptive Sound Technologies, maker of the Lectrofan Kinder, as well as our guest, Kylie Salick. You can learn more about her on her website, backtobasicsparenting.com. We have so many awesome things planned for you in 2018. In fact, I'm getting ready to pack my bags in a couple weeks and head to Florida for our annual Sister Site Conference with about 100 of the most amazing moms in the country, which all happen to be City Moms Blog site owners and team members. It's going to be so much fun, empowering, and enlightening. You for sure are going to want to follow along using the hashtag SisterSiteConf, C-O-N-F, that is, so SisterSiteConf18. And I'll have a lot more to share about that in our next episode. Until then, good luck with your little ones and their sleep schedules. And just one tip, when they have a good night of rest, which means you had a good night of rest, reward everyone with a fun breakfast, and don't forget to just add sprinkles.